So thank you for inviting me to speak this evening. I'm hoping to give you an insurer's view, but I think more importantly, I'm hoping to give you a sense of how it might feel to live and work with the constant threat of flood. So I think my key messages will be, it's important to get understandable information out into the hands of the people who are threatened with flood and policymakers, to make sure we're putting communities first when we're thinking about flooding, and to make sure we have a long-term strategy. So like everybody else, I'll start with some apocryphal stories of recent floods, I'll have some numbers that are probably more made up than the ones made by the Met Office and Environment Agency. But we estimate that 847 billion litres of water fell over Cumbria in the December 2015 storms, new records for rainfall. Defences that were in place were breached, overtopped, and communities got knocked back and were shattered. And we've touched on there are three different types of flooding that we generally talk about. There's surface water flooding, and there's river flooding, coastal flooding. And the recent events we've seen have mostly been of the surface water and river variety. And actually the thing that keeps me awake at night isn't river and surface water flooding, but indeed coastal flooding, because there'll be a lot of people affected in one go there. And as everybody has said, there will be further flooding. Now, the modelling is quite good. If we look at St Asaph in Wales, the models predicted very, very well where the water would flow, which properties would be flooded and which ones wouldn't. But the models aren't perfect, and in Kendal, a blocked culvert meant that a host of properties which no model expected to be flooded actually got flooded. So Aviva used drones. We were the first insurer on the ground in a lot of these events. Often the water hadn't yet subsided. So we used drones to fly over so we could understand which properties had flooded and which ones hadn't, to make sure we could get care and assistance to the people who needed it most. And another sort of fact, so we've got pretty good flood models within Aviva, and broadly speaking, around 50% of flooded properties are within the outlines we expected, and roughly 50% lie outside those outlines, which I think is a relatively poor figure. Now, I'm told by my favourite modellers that we can probably get up to about three quarters of the properties being well predicted, but that extra 25% who aren't well predicted, that does continue to worry me. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about a property in Lowestoft. So Lowestoft, the most easterly town in England, and whilst it is at threat of coastal inundation, this particular property is actually at relatively high risk of river flooding. In fact, it floods about on average once or twice a year. So the occupants of that house do not understand their flood risk. They probably understand the flood risk of that property better than anybody else in this room. They've lived through a number of events. But there are no common standards. And when we talk about 1 in 25, 1 in 100, 1 in 200 and 1 in 1,000 return periods, what does that actually mean to a customer? The ABI have proposed a traffic light system, green for low risk, amber for medium risk and red for high risk. That's a very interesting thing I wouldn't mind coming back to a little later. This is a property, this is a typical conversation I would have as the chief underwriting officer at Aviva. I'll get a phone call, a complaint, a customer saying, you've got me down as a high risk of flood, and you're trying to charge me a high premium. Why is that? There's not even a river nearby. And I would say something like, sir, you live in Tainter's Brook. It's called that for a reason. There's a brook nearby. But my point being, it's not untypical for a homeowner not to understand the flood risk for their property. So we can build in individual resilience. I've got some examples here. So you can fit floorboards. I found some white examples rather than the blue examples, and red air brick covers. You can adapt your kitchen so that rather than having a chipboard that turns into Weetabix, soggy Weetabix when it gets flooded, you can fit stainless steel units, for example. You can put non-return valves on water inlets and ensure that you've got a bung in the toilet to stop the water from coming in that way. And in fact, Aviva worked with Norfolk County Council to spend £30,000 retrofitting the Lowestoft house with flood resilient measures. So we put, it's flood resistance and flood resilience. So flood resistance is keeping the water out of the property. flood resilience is when the water gets into the property, making sure you can get back to normal quickly. So we had the non-return valves, we had the air brick covers, we had door boards to stop water from getting in, and then inside the property, ceramic floors throughout, plastic skirting. The walls were metal lined and covered in a water resistant plaster. We raised all the plugs in the property. The kitchen was fitted out with a resilient kitchen, and all the major appliances were raised on plinths. The door, you can just see in the bottom corner there, all the doors in the, on the downstairs were easy to lift off and take upstairs when the flood water was coming. So lots of good measures in place. And in fact, resilience does work very, very well. A couple of examples there of people holding back the water with local action. I don't know if people recognise the property on the right-hand side. It did feature on Grand Designs. It's the floating house. It's on the Thames, and indeed there was footage on Grand Designs of that property floating as the Thames flooded. So resilience does work. And indeed for our Lowestoft house, most often the water was kept out by the resistance measures. A couple of times water got into the property. Our homeowner was able to mop out her house in about 2 hours. It took her to get sorted out. Her neighbours were out of their properties for about 2 or 3 weeks. So it does absolutely work. There's help to build resilience, so there's grants available. There were, off the back of the winter storms, £5,000 for homeowners, £2,500 for commercial properties. So that they were available only in areas that were declared as major incidents, and the control of getting those grants into the hands of homeowners and businesses was through the local authority. They were only available after the flood, so it's a little bit like closing the door after the horse has bolted, but it's a great, great first step. But as we've talked about, there's been no common standards yet, so having had the resilience and resistance fitted to your property, you couldn't then say to the next person, don't worry, we're now protected to this particular level. So I think the grants could have been even more effective. The decisions on grants took time, and Aviva was repairing properties way before the decision on the grant was being made, and that was true for other insurers. It's not obvious that the grants were necessarily used in the right places. So they were used where a homeowner requested them, rather than where the model showed that property would be at high risk of flooding again and again and again, and therefore not necessarily as cost effective as it could have been. But more importantly, the resilience measures were not always welcomed by homeowners. And that, for me, is the big surprise that just needs a little bit of thinking about. So what I'd like to do is just re-look at those resistance and resilience measures we put in place. So look at the door board and the fittings that go around it, and the fact that you've got the red air brick covers you need to put on every time it floods, the fact that your kitchen now is very, very constrained in what style you can have, you've got your washing machine, your dishwasher permanently up at eye level, reminding you every day about the risk of flood, and where do you keep your toilet bung when you're not using it during a flood event? Interesting. So in the Lowestoft house, we had the main appliances on plinths. The homeowner had ceramic floors everywhere. Looked great in the kitchen and in the downstairs loo. They don't look quite so good in the lounge. Again, she was very constrained in her kitchen choice. She had plastic skirting, etc. So I think there's a different point of view to think about there. And then when you speak to people, and again, these are all quotes I have heard in my time as chief underwriting officer. It's only a bit of water in the house. Okay. Now, people who've been out to floods know what that water looks like. It's not tap water. What does a 1 in 25 mean anyway? Okay, that's very common. We've been here for 10 years and it's never flooded. But we're miles from the river. And I hear what you're saying, but the house is gorgeous. Okay, that is somebody in the buying process, having been and looked at the house, seeing it, falling in love with it, then finds out that it's at a 1 in 25 risk of flooding. The person went ahead and bought the house. The lady in Lowestoft removed all of the resilience measures from inside the house. Okay. So all the appliances are back on the floor. The ceramic floor has been taken out of a couple of the rooms and replaced with soft flooring. The kitchen is now a normal chipboard variety. and some of the plastic skirting's been taken away. It's that thinking that's going on in the homeowner's mind. Okay, so as we're thinking about resilience, and by the way, I'm a huge fan of resistance and resilience. Please don't get that, you know, don't get me wrong on that. I just think we need to think about it from the point of view of the homeowner and the business owner, and make sure we can come up with ideas for resistance and resilience, which people can live with day in, day out. Mr. Clarkson from Kendal famously had a swim in his kitchen. This is in the winter 2015 storms. So Mr. Clarkson, look, when you look at that picture, there's all sorts of emotions that go through your mind, you know. So fantastic Dunkirk spirit. The reason that Mr. Clarkson did this was to just give the neighbour something to have a chat about and laugh about, and give the Daily Mail something to take a photograph of. Okay, but this is his kitchen. Everything in there he paid for himself. He worked hard to pay for. He's now got effluent in his kitchen. He came out of the water. He was brown and stinking, and his shower wasn't working. Interesting, isn't it? So, good news, guys. Floodry is here. All our problems are over. Well, of course not, because Floodry provides great financial security in the sense that many people who couldn't afford flood insurance now can afford flood insurance. If your property floods, the excess is £250, whereas some people had to pay excesses of £5,000 before. When the repairs are made with Floodry, if they can be done cost-effectively, they'll be made resilient. And Floodry is building the biggest and best database of flooded properties in the UK. So some really good things coming through from Floodry. But it's only good for some. So it doesn't cover commercial properties, and it doesn't cover properties built after 2008. And of course, the emotional uncertainty and the psychological issues remain. You can still be taken from your home. You can still find effluent in your kitchen. And we don't know what's going to happen beyond Floodry. So there is a better way, and the better way is to build community infrastructure and defences, making sure we're defending many homes and many businesses, protecting families and livelihoods. And in building those defences, those community defences, we can make sure that the consequences are well managed by considering the whole river catchment. Not worked perfectly in recent flood events, but we can start to think about it far more as a whole river catchment, rather than having individuals operating individually and causing unintended consequences. And of course, you know, we all know the most famous community defence, the Thames Tidal Barrier. And of course, that reduces the need for individual compromises. So maybe you can have the kitchen that you always wanted, even if you live in a flood area. But recognising that those community defences can be overtopped. And so you do want to make sure you are still taking appropriate precautions. There's also a better way with building practices. So making sure that people only build where risk is low, where risk is understood, and where the risk is well managed. And absolutely welcoming the call for making sure that properties are built flood resilient, and repairs and extensions are flood resilient. Again, avoiding unintended consequences. And we'll all be familiar with the stories of people tarmacking over their front gardens to make driveways for their cars. Perfectly understandable from an individual homeowner's point of view, but causing causing extra stress on the drainage. So we do see good building practice in action. On the left are properties in the Netherlands, which are built from the ground up to float, designed to float. On the right-hand side, that is a new build in Scotland. And what you can just see in white inside the drain is the air brick. So the builders fitted the air brick in the drain. So you imagine that drain just getting a bit full, water going into the property. And the damp-proof course gap is about 2 inches. From the ground. So we need to get much better about managing building practices. So in summary, I want to make sure that people have understandable information about what their flood risk is. We need to make sure we're putting communities first. It's far more efficient than just taking individual action. And we need a long-term strategy to make sure that the country is protected against flood. Thank you very much.